House come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
It's time for a brand new installment of Capital Ideas, now in its 15th year of helping Washingtonians learn how their state government works and who and what it's working for. This is the part where I say we call it Capital Ideas because it's the podcast where members of the Majority House Democratic Caucus sit down at the Washington State Capitol and talk about ideas. Today we'll hear from Representative Lillian Ortiz Self of Mukilteo. First elected in 2012, she's in her sixth two-year term representing the people of the 21st District, and she just began her third year as chair of the aforementioned Majority House Democratic Caucus. We recorded this conversation on Tuesday, January 17th, 2023, and here it is. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Representative Lillian Ortiz Self.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
You represent the people of the 21st District, and tell us a little bit about that so that the listeners who don't have you as their representative will know who they're listening to.
Absolutely. Legislative District 21 is Edmonds, Mukilteo, I have a little bit of Everett, a little bit of Linwood. We have the Boeing plant in my district. We have ferries because we have the Mukilteo ferries in my district and in Edmonds. Our waterways are very important to us. We have a lovely district.
I like it a lot.
Thank you. I do too.
In addition to being a state representative for several years now, you are also the chair of the House Democratic Caucus. This is a pretty large group of people now, one of the largest majorities that any caucus has had in maybe a generation. Your role as chair of that caucus seems to be key because every time that the House Democrats need to get together to strategize, to plan floor action, to set priorities, to do any number of other things that are key to their role as legislators, you're chairing that group. That's a pretty large group of people with egos of their own. How do you tend to run that situation?
Let me start by saying that I am so honored to be the caucus chair of such a wonderful group of members. As you said, 58 members from across the state of Washington. This is my second time that I've been elected into this position. So it's my second term serving as caucus chair and the first Latina to have this role. So I'm very excited and very proud to be able to do this. You know, our caucus is a very critical part of the process, and in that it is during that time that we all discuss every piece of legislation before it gets out to the House floor, and those discussions can determine whether or not that bill will go any further. So, you know, we have a committee process, it passes a committee, and then we discuss it as a whole, and we have lots of members that are not part of those committees. So for many of them, they're hearing about this bill for the first time. We need to be able to explain it and facilitate that caucus in a way that people get their questions answered and continue to let that bill keep moving forward. If they don't have their questions answered, or if there's a lot of controversy, that could pretty much kill a bill or stop it at least from getting any further. So it's a very critical and crucial part of the process.
The caucus has grown so large, and I suspect that the pandemic plays a role in this also, that the caucus room, which is right off the floor of the House of Representatives, is no longer being used for caucus. The House Rules Room downstairs, which is a much larger room, is now where the caucus meets. Do you find any difference in there other than the fact that people are spaced a little farther apart?
Our goal is to get back to our caucus room. We love it, and it's right off the wings. We can, you know, hop in there and hop back out real quick. So our goal is to be able to eventually do that again. But with the pandemic and trying to keep everyone safe and healthy so that we can make it through these 105 days, we thought it was prudent to start off in the rules room where there's almost double the space of our caucus room, giving people more space and ability to space themselves out and hopefully not spread as many germs. As things settle down, we hope to get back to our caucus room because we love being in there.
You are a school counselor in your non-legislative life. And I'm wondering, does your training as a counselor in dealing with disparate personalities and lots of different situations, many of which may be emergent and you've got to make decisions on the spot, how much does that play in how you go about your role as chair of the House Democratic Caucus?
Very good question. I am a school counselor. I'm also a mental health counselor. And, you know, in those professions, listening, mediating, showing compassion and care are all critical parts in that role. And you need every one of those skill sets when you're facilitating a caucus of 58. So I think for me, what I bring into this is a desire to make sure that I hear every member and their concerns, and that I allow for them to utilize their voice and feel safe enough to be able to have the rich discussions that we need to have in order to move legislation forward.
I'm not sure that this would affect the way that you chair caucus meetings, but I think it's notable and should be pointed out that the House Democratic Caucus here in 2023 has more women and more people of color than in the history of the state, which goes all the way back to 1889. I think that's remarkable. And I just wanted to get that fact out there. Whether it makes any difference to the way you do your job or not, I think that it should be noted.
Absolutely. And the more diversity we have, you know that representation matters. So it affects the legislation that comes out. It affects the varying opinions and the discussions. And so it's critical that we have all those voices at the table. We currently have about 43% of our caucus is now people of color, and over 50% of our caucus are women. And so, absolutely, I've seen a change in the discussions that we have had in caucus due to the varying perspectives that are now there.
I suppose equity is something that comes up more often than it has in the past, because, first of all, that's on a lot of people's minds anyway, but also because many of the people who are now members of the caucus, this is something that they have given a whole lot of thought to and have experienced some inequity in their lifetimes.
Absolutely. I think that discussion is much more real, much more impactful when you hear the stories of people who are actually advocating for it that have lived through those experiences, right? We have some wonderful allies in the Democratic Caucus. That's what a lot of our values of our caucus, the Democratic Caucus, is values of equity, right? And justice and fairness. But now, in addition to those voices, we have real life stories of people who have lived through every one of these experiences, and they bring that in a very rich way.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that you were the first Latina to chair the House Democratic Caucus. I believe that you now hold the highest office of a Latina since 1889 in either of the caucuses, a Republican or Democratic. And I'm wondering how it feels to be a role model for a whole lot of people to have attained that position of respect, authority, and responsibility.
For me, it's very humbling, and I'm very honored to have that position. It does not go to waste on me the importance of representation, the importance of letting every youth that I talk to, every adult that I meet, everyone in my community know that they too can achieve this, that their voice matters, that I'm not any different than them, that I came from the same circumstances that they came from, and yet I'm able to do this work, and so can they. And to me, that's the most exciting part, is making sure that they realize that I'm not any different, and if I can do this, they certainly can and way surpass anything that I've accomplished. I feel a tremendous sense of responsibility to make sure I'm opening doors for our young people that are coming behind us.
I know you've got to go. It's getting late in the day, and I appreciate you having waited around this long to meet with me. But before you go, I want to talk about your role as a state legislator as opposed to chair of a caucus. I know you've got priorities of your own. They may be dovetail perfectly with priorities of the caucus. They may be something that is special to you and that you're going to be focusing on. It's not surprising that a couple of these things that are pretty high profile have to do with education, given your occupation. One has to do with student teaching and changing the way that system works.
This is one of those bills that aligns with our caucus focus this session, which is the educator workforce. We know that our economy matters. building up our workforce again is going to impact our economy. We also know that in many sectors during the pandemic, our workforce took a hit. Some of those areas are areas such as education, nursing, healthcare, childcare, behavioral health. They've all been taking a big hit during the pandemic, and they were in trouble to begin with. My bill is the Educator Workforce Bill, and it is focusing on how do we recruit and retain teachers. And we do that by one of the things we heard, I've been working on this for over a year, from our teachers and our students wanting to go into that profession, is that student teaching takes a big toll on them. They have to take classes, pay tuition, work full time, and they don't get any pay for it. And it becomes really hard, and it's a disincentive for many of them to go into the field. What my bill proposes is a year of residency where they're co-teaching their last year with a certified teacher and they're getting paid while they're doing that, which is a win-win both for the school district, and for them. And so I'm really excited about this bill.
That does seem like it would be a huge disincentive to not only be getting no pay, but to be spending a whole lot of money for the privilege of not being paid for what you're doing.
Exactly. The other part of that bill is that it expands mentoring for our first-year teachers. Professional development is critical to someone's longevity in a job. And so expanding the BEST program, which is a mentoring program that we have to ensure that all first-year teachers can have access to it, I think is going to make a big difference. There's a lot of other aspects to that bill, but those are two pieces that I'm really excited about being able to implement.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Another bill that you're sponsoring that has to do with the classroom pertains to dual language instruction. I'm not clear on how that bill works, but I would love to hear more about it.
Absolutely. So I think some of you may have heard Chris Rakedahl, our superintendent of public instruction, talk about his desire to have dual language across the state. We've been working together for years now, providing grant dollars to school districts that want to provide a dual language program, piecing it together year after year with grant dollars. We have finally gotten to the point where this bill would require our districts within the next 10 to 15 years to have in place a dual language program per district so that every district in the state of Washington would have a dual language program. And it's dual instruction, so it could be Spanish and English, it could be Mandarin and English, and it starts at a young age. We have all this brain development that tells us that there's a part of the brain that gets stimulated, that it goes dormant when it's not used. And it is the piece of our brain that responds to another language and learning another language and how fast our young people, our young children are like sponges, you know, absorbing all that information. And other countries do that. But we continue to teach a second language in eighth grade and ninth grade. And by then, that piece of our brain has been so dormant and it makes it so much more difficult. So I'm really excited for our English speakers to be able to expand their brain capacity and learn another language. I'm really excited about those students who do not speak English that can be partners in this process, not only learning academics in their language, but learning the English language and becoming dually linguistic. And I'm really excited about that. It's a win-win for both. The bill also provides a stipend for our educators who get certified in that, because again, our workforce is critical and we need to build a workforce to be able to sustain this initiative. And it also gives a stipend to our paraeducators who will be working alongside us.
I think some of the kids for whom English is not their first language might get a kick out of, in a way, being peer mentors to their English-speaking buddies in this class.
Absolutely. And then our English speakers are peer mentors to them as well. So it's a win-win for both. But, you know, sadly, our English, our non-English speakers, they may learn English, but they lose out on so much academics because they're not being taught in their language. And then our English speakers lose out on that ability to expand their brain capacity and learn a whole nother language. And so I think this is going to be a win-win for both.
What is the status of this bill and also the bill having to do with student teachers? Where are they right now in the legislative pipeline?
The dual language bill has been dropped, and we are waiting for our hearing committee date. And the educator workforce bill will be dropped on Wednesday.
And just for people who don't hang around the Capitol all the time, dropping a bill doesn't mean throwing it in the trash. It means putting it into a virtual hopper, which then makes it become a reality at some point.
Right. It starts to codify it and set it in motion. And from there, we have a committee hearing where the education chair has said she would hear both of these bills. And so I'm excited to bring it before the committee and we get the process moving.
Again, good luck.
Thank you so much.
Is there anything we haven't brought up here that before you go, you would like to make sure that people get to hear about Lillian Ortiz Self?
Well, I guess I would say that as someone who has had many life experiences and then has had many opportunities to bring her vocation, her work, her education to this place, nothing compares to bringing the voices and the stories of the families that I work with. To me, that, you know, putting my education aside, my job experiences, my work experience, all of that contributes. Obviously, it helps you to be successful. But the part for me is what helps me stay passionate and continue to fight for these issues are the stories and the voices of the children, the students, the families that I work with on a daily basis when I'm not here and that I have had the privilege of hearing. And it is those stories that propel me to keep doing this work. So please keep telling those stories. They're critical, they're important, and sometimes it feels like they're falling on deaf ears, but it's hard not to be impacted by them. They will shape your life and therefore shape our legislation, which is why we're a citizen legislature, so that we can continue to bring those stories to Olympia.
I'll say this for the final time. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
House Democratic Caucus Chair and Representative Lillian Ortiz Self, thank you for giving yourself to Capital Ideas for a little while today, and I hope that we talk again soon.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Capital Ideas for today. I think we got a pretty good glimpse into who Representative Lillian Ortiz Self is and what she's up to here in Olympia. If you think this was a beneficial use of about 15 minutes of your life, you really should subscribe to Capital Ideas. It's free, it's on all the usual podcast platforms, and if you want, you can subscribe at housedemocrats.wa.gov. Just click on the button that says Media at the top of the page, and from there, it'll be a snap. We'll be back in a day or two with another new episode. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889. Thanks for listening.